Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm joined on the podcast today by Stephen Iwanu, author of the new novel, Yesteryear. Writer Fred LeBron wrote about the novel Yesteryear. This is one of the most entertaining novels I've read in years. It will capture your imagination and not let it go. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for having me.
If someone hasn't yet heard about your novel, Yesteryear, how would you describe the novel?
Yesteryear is interesting. It's a combination of historical fiction, biographical fiction. It's part comic novel. It's part noir. And if that's not enough, I threw in some magical realism. So it's a really fun read about a fun subject. And I'm hoping readers embrace it.
Do you remember the original idea or impetus that led you to writing Yesteryear?
Sort of. I was either at a bar or a party. I can't remember which. And somebody had mentioned that the writer and creator of The Lone Ranger was from Buffalo, New York, my hometown. And I didn't believe them. Buffalo is a very good town about promoting creative people from here or who have some relationship with the city. And I had never heard of Franz Stryker, this man who was supposed to have invented the Lone Ranger. And so I did some research, and you know, sure enough, he was from Buffalo. And not only that, he was from my neighborhood. He went to high school two blocks up the street at Lafayette High School in the 1920s, and he wrote the Lone Ranger just a few blocks north of me in the 1930s. And I couldn't figure out, how come we're not celebrating this man? Because not only did he write The Lone Ranger, but he also wrote The Green Hornet and Sergeant Preston the Yukon. I mean, it's a huge influence on early days of radio and American pop culture in the 20th century. So I did a little bit more research, and I found out that the reason probably why he's not as well known as he should be is because he sold the rights to The Lone Ranger for $10 before the Ranger exploded into this money-making machine that's lasted 90 years. And then I also found out that in the 1940s, about 10 years after he had sold those rights to a man named George W. Trendle, Trendle started claiming in articles and interviews that it was he who invented the Lone Ranger and not Stryker. And there was even a rumor going around that Stryker didn't even join the writing team until after the Ranger had been on the air for a while. And so once I learned all about this, I said, well, he just seems like a Buffalo guy. I need to write about him.
To clarify, was he writing pulp stories or was he writing radio serials?
He was writing radio scripts here locally in Buffalo for WEBR, a AM radio station that's still on the air today. And what happened was, the Depression hit and Stryker was becoming more and more responsible for extended members of his family who had been wiped out during the stock market crash and then the Depression that followed. So he was responsible for about 12 people altogether financially. Wow. And his, salary from WEBR wasn't quite cutting it. So what he was doing is he was repurposing scripts. So scripts that he wrote for WEBR locally, he was sending out nationally to other radio stations and offering them to those stations for between $2 and $6 an episode as a way to make extra money. And WXYZ out of Detroit that was owned by George W. Trendle started buying these radio dramas from Stryker. And by the end of 1932, WXYZ was buying three or four radio scripts a week from Fran. And then in December of that year, Trendle sent a telegram to Fran Stryker and said, hey, can you come up with a Western? We want all the hokum in it. And that was the word he used, hokum. Mass riders, girl tied to railroad tracks, six-gun shootouts. Can you do that? And Fran said, absolutely, because 2 years earlier, he had written a radio series called Covered Wagon Days that had aired here in Buffalo. And for whatever reason, he went back and pulled episode number 10 out of the file cabinet. and reworked it and got some feedback from the folks at WXYZ and came up with the Lone Ranger.
That's great. And it sounds like from what you were saying, he would resell these scripts for this other radio station to record their own version. So, I mean, this is more getting into kind of the history of radio mm-hmm. than specifically Stryker. But
sure.
At what point did they start recording them and then kind of syndicating or distributing, you know, one program across multiple stations?
Remember, this is the early days of radio. This is 1932,
sure. Yeah, this
1933.
Is really, really early.
So radio was done live. They had their own acting troupe.
Ah.
They had their own actors. They had their own script writers. They had their own orchestras in studio for these live shows. And if you think about when all the streaming channels came in, like Netflix, how all those those services were starved for content, right? They were buying up all these series and movies because they needed to, you know, have stuff streaming. It was the same thing 90 years ago. These radio stations needed content. And so that's why they were buying scripts from Stryker and others like Fran who were doing this, so they could have scripts for their in-house actors to perform live on the air. So it wasn't until a little bit later that they started recording these shows. And you can hear a lot of them on XM Radio. There's a classic radio station that are just great
right.
for all those old programming.
How did you tackle the research for this novel?
Well, I started out just reading up on Franz Stryker, and I was able to find a biography that his son, Franz Stryker, had written called His Typewriter Grew Spurs. I found a biography about George W. Trendle and read that. And, you know, there was so much written about the Lone Ranger. And then what really helped me out was Stryker died, you know, at a young age. I think he was just around 60 years old in a car crash. And his estate donated all his papers to the University of Buffalo. And I'm an alumni there. So there's 25 or 30 cartons of radio scripts and manuscripts and telegrams and letters and Lone Ranger memorabilia. And I was able to go into the special collections and go through those cartons. And so that was a lot of fun. And it was also really interesting to see all the stuff that, you know, holding something that's kind of iconic, you know, the early radio scripts of the Lone Ranger, it was pretty cool. And then a lot of times what I did just to get in the feel of that era, I would go down to the Central Library and just hop on the microfiche and just read newspapers from that era, the early 30s, just to get a sense of what was going on in the city, you know, prices, advertisements. Those are great to look at. Look at they had the radio listings like we have the TV listings, right? They had that. So I could see, you know, at what time were these shows being broadcast? At what time were they signing off for the night? So I did a lot of research until I just felt full. That's the way I can explain it. I felt like I knew enough about Fran's story and knew enough about that era just to get started. And so when I felt that way, that's when I dove in head first.
In your novel, Yesteryear, you weave historical figures into the novel. Did you plot the novel before you began writing, or did you just dive in?
Mostly I dove in, but I did know that, you know, there were certain plot points I had to hit, right? I had to establish Franz sending out those manuscripts so I can make the connection with Trendle, just like it occurred in real life. And I had to hit that point where Trendle reached out for a Western series for Fran to write. And then I kind of condensed the real timeline to have the story, the novel end after the radio premiered in Buffalo and Trendle made him the offer for the Lone Ranger rights. So I knew the basic plot points that I had to hit, but that was as much outlining as I did. I just kind of dove right in. And I knew because of the nature of the story, because it was based on Fran's life, that there were certain real life historical figures that needed to be included, like Fran and Trendle, and also John L. Barrett, who was a local radio actor here in Buffalo, who was the original voice of the Lone Ranger when they did the pilot here in town. So I already had some real life historical figures in the book out of necessity. And then I just thought, well, why don't I include others from that era that lived in town? Like light heavyweight, former lightweight heavy champion, light heavyweight champion, Jimmy Slattery from South Buffalo. I don't know if Slattery and Stryker ever crossed paths, but they were both here at the same time. So again, it's fiction, right? So they're best friends.
Makes for a good scene.
Yeah. And then I read about Stefano Magadino, who was head of the Buffalo crime family here for decades, part of the original crime commission that set up, you know, American organized crime. And he was known as the Undertaker. That was his nickname because he was a mortician. He owned funeral parlors. And that was just such a weird fact that I said, well, you know what? We're going to put the mob in the book too. So let's make Magadino a character. So the idea of bringing in real life historical figures kind of grew as I started, you know, drafting this thing.
Can you tell us about your writing journey that led you to writing your first stories and getting your first novel published?
Well, it was a long journey. Yeah, I probably started writing 40 years ago when I was in college. And I started because I read John Irving's The Hotel New Hampshire, and I finished that book. And I said, I want to write like this guy. I want to write to make something that makes you laugh out loud so you realize it's sad and makes you stop laughing. So after I graduated from the University of Buffalo, I went to Miami University to get my master's in creative writing. And I was about, 23 or so. And about this time, there were that whole slew of American male writers who were getting published at that time. And they were all 30 or under, like Bret Easton Ellis and Michael Chabon. Right. You know, all there was like four or five of those, that Brat Pack that came out. So I'm sitting there at Miami thinking, well, I'll be 25 when I get out of here. I'll have a manuscript. I'll have my first novel published by the time I'm 30, like these guys. So that was the plan. 30 passed, and then 40 passed. And then 50 passed, and wow. I had a handful of short stories, but I had not only a drawer full of rejections, but also three or four novels that had failed and a short story collection that failed. So I decided, all right, Steve, maybe it's not your destiny to be a writer. But you know how it is with writers, right? Or all artistic people. You're just driven. It's not something you can set down and say, I'm not going to do it anymore. It gnaws at you. So what I decided to do as part of my midlife crisis is go back and get an MFA. And so I did that. And when I was at the Queen's University of Charlotte, something clicked when I was down there. I don't know if it was being around all those creative people or if I had lived enough or if I had finally, my craft had finally gotten polished enough, but something clicked down there. And I wrote 17 short stories in a row that all were published in literary magazines. And it was my thesis. And then it was published as a short story collection called Muscle Cars. And that was in 2015. So it had been like a 30-year journey before when I decided that this is what I wanted to do until I got that first book published. And that kind of opened the door. And then last year, my first novel, Rook, was published. And then yesteryear just came out about a month ago on October 3rd.
Can you tell us about your MFA experience? I mean, obviously, you said something clicked for you, but how was it structured and how was it for you?
Yeah. And again, I don't want to come across as the MFA is the only path.
Sure.
But this was the path that I stumbled down. So I did a 2-year low residency program, which Queens offered, and a lot of schools do. So basically you only have to be there 2 weeks out of the year because, you know, you have your family and you have your 9-to-5 job. And then throughout the semester, you're reading and writing and submitting online. So I went there armed, right? I told you I had 3 or 4 failed novels. So I brought one of them with me, which I thought was pretty good, completed. And so my goal was to work on that 1 year. It's a 2-year program. And then I was about, just had started maybe, I don't know, 50 or 60 pages into a comic novel. So my plan was I'll work on one the first year of the program. I'll work on the second novel the second year of the program. I'll graduate with 2 completed manuscripts ready to go out and send to agents. That was my plan. So the first semester, we're working on the partial novel, the work in process, which was a comic novel. And nobody in my workshop was laughing. So that was not a good sign. So that semester ended. I said, all right, you know, that's not working. Let's put this one aside and switch gears and work on the completed novel the second semester instead of waiting for the second year. And that didn't go much better. And my instructor that year was a wonderful author named David Payne, whose last book was Barefoot to Avalon. And what he did, I guess he got tired of reading all this really bad writing I was submitting. So he did the most painful and generous thing that's ever happened to me, I think. He took one of my submissions, 20 pages or whatever it was, and then he line edited, line by line, the way he would rewrite it, which is a very generous thing to do, as I said, because it's, you know, 18, 20 pages. And he did it in red ink, so it looked like there was blood on every single page, and every single line was touched, and it was crushing. I go, oh my God, I've been doing this for 30 years, and look how bad I am. And so I went home that summer, and I didn't know if I was going to return to the program in the fall, but like I said, you know, it gnaws at you. So sorry, I'm going to change gears. I'm going to study these 20 pages that David marked up. And I'm going to learn to write clean sentences. I'm going to learn to write tight stories. And my goal is not going to graduate with 2 completed novels. My goal is to complete 1 publishable short story. That was I really lowered my goals. And that summer, I worked on a story after studying David's markups. I wrote a short story called Muscle Cars, which is the title story of what would be my collection. And like I said, something clicked. I workshopped it that fall. Everybody loved it in my workshop. And then I was off to the races. Like I said, I wrote 16 right in a row, and they all found homes. And then it came out in 2015 in book form.
Is it possible for you to articulate what that feedback was, just from, you know, even like a paragraph or a page of that 20 pages that he touched every line?
Oh, it was, you know, tightening the language. That was key. It was tightening the language. And then really getting to the story early on, especially in a short story, it's vital. And really, an extension of that is understanding what the concept of story is and what does story mean. And it was nothing new. I had heard it, you know, for years, you know, probably from junior high school, you know, man versus man versus nature. You know, you have to have a main character that wants something. You have to have an antagonist that's preventing that creates conflict and tension. Then you have a resolution, and then the character grows and changes somehow. It was nothing I hadn't heard in any of the writing classes or books that I read, but for some reason, it just clicked and it made sense, and it started manifesting itself in my writing, and I started being able to edit myself better. So yeah, it was, it was quite the experience studying that manuscript. And I just told that story last week, and I was down in Greenville, South Carolina at M. Judson Bookstores for an author event, a reception they had for me. And someone asked that. I told that story, and someone asked, well, do you still have those 20 pages? And I said, I do. But I moved, and it's in a box in the basement somewhere. But I'm going to dig it out and go back, because I probably haven't looked at it in, you know, 7 or 8 years now, and see exactly what I needed to work on then and how my writing's changed.
What writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories or novels?
I would say, I think you have to write every day. I write from 5 a.m. till 7 a.m. and I shoot for 7 days a week. Some days you don't make it, but that's my goal. And so I think you have to write, if not every day, at least regularly. And for those 2 hours or 1 hour, whatever you set aside for yourself, that's your writing time, and you have to protect it. So you can't schedule, you know, calls from work during that time. You can't check email or go on Facebook. You just have to be focused for those 2 hours or whatever it is on the work at hand. And I tell people, don't get hung up on word count. You know, it's like, oh, I only wrote 200 words. Like, well, that's good. That's 200 more than you wrote yesterday. Some days I only write 20 words. Doesn't matter. You're just moving the needle. You're moving forward. So write regularly and guard that time. And then overall, this is Fred Lebron. You quoted one of his blurbs at the beginning of the show. The best advice I got about writing in general was, and this is from Fred, writing is a game of attrition. Don't attrit. So don't quit. Like I said, it took me 30 years. You know, that doesn't mean it's going to take you 30 years. But if you quit, it's never going to happen.
Are you working on another novel now?
Yeah, I've been working hard. So I actually have my third novel will be out in 2025. And I wrote that, I call it my pandemic novel. And it has nothing to do with the pandemic. I just started it right before lockdown and finished it like 2 years later. And, you know, we read to escape. I wrote to escape during the pandemic and the lockdown. Just because the news was so awful.
Sure.
And you couldn't go anywhere. So I just kind of escaped into my own little fictional world where I'm somewhat in control as a way of, you know, preserving mental health and having something to do besides watching, you know, Netflix. So it was a pure escape novel. It's called After Pearl. It's set here in Buffalo after Pearl Harbor. And I had watched on TV this really bad movie about a detective. And, you know, he was one-dimensional, but, you know, he was always, you know, he won every fight and he got every girl and he had his own moral code. And I said, man, I want to write like the opposite of that cliche private eye. So my detective, his name is Nicholas Bishop. He's an alcoholic. His foot was run over by a taxi. So he uses a cane and this novel opens. He's become a house detective because he's lost everything. He lost his practice, his secretary. He can't find his car. And to him, being a house detective at a hotel is the lowest you can go in the private eye business. And he wakes up on the floor after a 5-day bender, can't remember anything, total blackout. And 2 bullets from his gun have been fired. And the police want to talk to him about a missing singer. And that kicks off the mystery. So Bishop has to piece together the last 5 days of his life and try to remain sober. And I didn't want to glamorize his drinking, you know, like they did in those early, you know, noir novels. I wanted to make him reflect what it's really like, you know, to be struggling with an addiction. So I'm hoping that comes through. And as I said, that book will be out in May of 2025.
What novels have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Oh, I read, I just finished Justice for All by Carla Damron. It's a mystery writer out of South Carolina. That's an excellent book. Was released October 28th. So I read an earlier copy and blurbed that for Carla. That was a great book. I'm reading currently A Gathering of Men by Rona Simmons, I believe. And that's about pilots during World War II. And I also read Secret Identity by Alex Segura that came out a year or two ago, which was excellent as well and has won all sorts of awards.
Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your novels?
Yeah, you can check out my website. It's www.sg, and then my last name, EOANNOU. And there's a lot of information on my website, events and interviews and places where you can buy my book. But I tell people the most important page on my website is the last one. That's the contact page. So if you want to reach out with questions or comments about my books, I answer all the emails. So take advantage of that contact page.
That's wonderful. Well, again, we've been speaking to Stephen Iowanu, author of the new novel Yesteryear. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Stephen, thanks for doing this interview.
Oh, thank you so much. I had a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.